And welcome, Nashville. Once again, this is the Morning Drive on 102.5. John Roberts, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson taking you through another a wild and wacky week it has been in the world of sports. Seems like there's never a dull moment, but there's also good news woven within this tapestry of all the bad news that we have. Want to welcome in John Glennon from Broadway Sports. He is a guy who is very familiar with Titans, the Predators, all the years in the Music City. But, John, what we're dealing with right now is a good bit of really good news in the fact that Nashville SC has now recorded that franchise first victory, and they did it in pretty good fashion.
Yeah, I agree. It was nice to see that happen. You know, I mean, this is a team that could not have had a more difficult, first year in the MLS. We had the, of course, a tornado hitting earlier, knocked a couple of their guys out of their dwellings. The team was struck down by the COVID, knocked out of the MLS restart tournament. And they hadn't played a game in 5 months, really, before going into last night. So to see them get a win, to see it coming with a late goal and kind of a little flourish there at the end. One of the guys who was knocked out of his home by that tornado, David Akam, scores the game winner. So this team deserved a few good bounces, and it's good to see them get that first victory.
All right, Johnny, we're going to get to Titans here, but first, on Nashville SC, I want the absolute nitty-gritty X and O soccer analysis of last night's match.
Like, let me get you another guess then. No.
No, you got this. No, you've got this.
I think it was probably about what we expected from Nashville SC, especially coming back from a long break. What we know about this team is it's not an offensively gifted team. So they went into last night's game, again, knowing they hadn't played in a long time. They're playing an away game. It was a very sound, I thought, defensive game. Didn't give up very many chances. If you watched it, it might not have been a thing of beauty, but they did what they had to do, and it looked like they were going to come away with 1 point, and then all of a sudden they put in a sub near the end. He makes a good run down the field, boom, they get a goal, and you're getting 3 points instead of the one. So I think it was, they played the way they needed to get a first point last night. A very sound defensive game again. Took advantage of one of some of their rare offensive opportunities, and boom, you get your first MLS win.
We're talking to John Glennon from Broadway Sports. And John, when you look at the upcoming NFL season and what it may mean for the Titans, I think you talk to just about any old school football coach or even one from the new school, if there is such a thing, that they tell you win games with offense, you win championships with defense. There's really solidity on the offensive side of the football. But just how far behind, I mean, you read some of the people that are analyzing the Titans defense, where the holes are, just how far behind do you think they are, if at all?
In terms of defense?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's certainly going to be far more adjustment on the defensive side of the ball than on offense. I mean, it's so unusual, especially for me, a guy who's watched and covered the Titans for so many years, to see them going into a season and everybody is talking about how good the offense is and can the offense carry the defense. We just haven't seen that very often over the years. But yeah, you look a little closer at that defense, you're missing the coordinator from last year, who was one of the greats in Dean Pease. You're missing two or three other assistants off last year's team. Jarrell Casey gone, Logan Ryan gone. So there are certainly some holes to fill on the defensive side of the ball, and the defense was only, probably average overall last year anyway. So I think some of the key questions they're going to have to ask, where are the sacks going to come from? This team didn't get to the quarterback enough last year. And again, they lose Casey and they lose Ryan. So how are you going to fill those holes? Do you have that depth on the edge that you want? Because, Reggie Gilbert is cut. Vic Beasley is a giant question mark right now, I still think, and then you look at like the slot cornerback position, who is going to fill Logan Ryan's spot, and can they do that as well as Logan Ryan did? So certainly some question marks And as I say, it's unusual. You know, most times with the Titans, you go into a year saying, well, the defense will be pretty solid, but can the offense get to 20 points? Well, you know, the Titans did much better than that last year and should be an excellent offensive team again. So, yeah, the real question marks are on the other side of the ball.
I also wonder, John, if maybe early in this season, you know, a lot of times we talk about early in seasons in football, defenses being ahead of offenses, but I wonder if the lack of preseason games might make it the other way around. You know, I mean, we already see, I think, probably worse tackling in the NFL because of less contact leading into games. I think that's you could argue that anyway. I wonder if offenses might be ahead early. And then on this Titans defense, you mentioned the edge. Vic Beasley has to pass his physical. Reggie Gilbert cut. How do you look at those two moves in tandem, and what's the concern level on Beasley right now?
I think there's a pretty solid level of concern on Beasley right now. I mean, if you could have, you know, written a script for a guy to make a bad first impression, Vic Beasley is following that pretty well right now. I mean, you know, obviously AWOL for 10 days before he actually shows up to camp, you know, $500,000 worth of fines, and then once he shows up, you know, a couple days later, he fails the physical and he's not on the field. And you never got the sense that he was clearly communicating with the Titans while he was gone, that there was a clear and good reason while he was gone. So, you know, I have real concerns there because it's not like this is an anomaly necessarily for Vic Beasley. There have been always been kind of questions about his want to, you know, even when he was with Atlanta. Atlanta didn't pursue him after his contract this year. So I think the question marks surrounding Vic Beasley and then Reggie Gilbert getting, you know, waived injured, I really think, you know, that edge linebacker position, the outside linebacker position, there's still some questions there, you know, in terms of depth and quality right now. And, you know, of course, we've all talked about one Jadeveon Clowney who might answer a lot of those questions, and that still remains a possibility. I think logic says that still happens, but who knows with Clowney at this point.
Yeah, Clowney is such a question mark in terms of, you know, he led. I didn't realize this until the other day, but he led the league in defensive penalties. And that's a Mike Vrabel discipline thing. You don't know how well that fits together, but certainly they were together before, which makes it a good fit as well. But Johnny, I was wondering, with the way they're approaching with the retirement of Dean Pease, going in without a defensive coordinator per se, we've seen so many defensive coordinators move over to head coaching jobs and been very successful, and you know that the Titans being one example of that right now. Is it all strange to not have a defensive coordinator per se in this situation?
Yes and no. I mean, that has certainly been the common practice. I can't remember the Titans off the top of my head ever going in without a defensive coordinator per se. On the other hand, Mike Vrabel, you know, has always had a very, very significant hand in the defense and the defensive play calling. He's been a coordinator in the past for the Texans, and nobody knows the defensive scheme better than him. So if he's the play caller, you know, I think it makes a lot of sense. And he has said you know, alluded to the fact that when the Titans start doing some unscripted sessions in practice coming up, maybe he gives Shane Bowen a chance to call some of those plays there, see how that goes. And maybe, you know, if things go well there, maybe he gives even more responsibility to Shane Bowen in that regard. I mean, Shane Bowen is certainly, you know, cut from the same cloth, the same Houston background, playing under Mike Vrabel for the past 2 years. It's just a matter of, does he have enough experience to make that big jump to play caller this year? I think personally, I think it would be a good idea to move those duties more to Shane Bowen as a play caller, because personally, I think Mike Vrabel's strength, or one of his strengths, is just that high energy that he has and how he's so intense and so hands-on about every position on the field. And I think if you're more of that defensive play caller, that takes a little bit of Mike Vrabel away from the various positions on the field. So I think the Titans would be better off you know, moving some of those duties to Shane Bowen.
All right, let's hear the John Glennon plan to fix the Nashville Predators? You're in charge. You have full power. What are you doing?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, you have to, you know, sort of the easier moves, I think, you know, on the second line, I think Michael Granlund was a guy that just never really worked out, unfortunately. So I think you bid him farewell. Probably Craig Smith as well. He's had a number of good years for the Predators, but might be time to move on. Those are the easy moves because those guys are at the end of their deals. I'm still at a little bit puzzling over Kyle Turris. One part, you know, says buy the guy out, but that's a lot of money over a lot of years coming up. You know, maybe it's best to try Kyle Turris one more time under John Hines after a full training camp. Maybe he plays well enough to get some kind of a trade, even if you have to pay some of the money at that point. But clearly, there have to be some changes. You know, I think Philip Tomasino, the number one draft pick from a couple of years ago, you know, I think you give him a long look. Ellie Tolvanen, I think, you know, has to give a long look. But, you know, bottom line here, I think we have to all remember that even if the Predators, you know, go through some of these changes, realistically, the core of this team is coming back. You're not going to blow up the entire core just because of the contract situation. So it's going to be up to a lot of these core guys to turn things back around. You can't just completely transform the team because, you know, there's such a high number of guaranteed contracts here.
Big challenges ahead. John Glennon, Broadway Sports. John, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate the time and the insight, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, be safe. So in the NHL, players got to play, coaches have to coach, but what is more important? You're listening to The Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Incorporated studio, powered by RumbleOn.com on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and streaming on the Game Nashville app.
I think, you know, his system was fully implemented, and this isn't to say it was, you know, Lavi didn't have a good system. I think the biggest change for me, and I'm sure Yost can speak to this too, but as a center, I thought it was a lot easier a bit in the D zone because we were able to play a bit more of a zone and hand guys off. The D were able to stay near the net a little bit more, and the forwards would play higher. So for me, that was easier. And I think the best part about that was we knew where our exits were when we did steal the puck. You know, when you're man on man, Yost might have chased a guy up to the blue line. They rim it down. I pick it off, and I don't really, you know where Yost is. I think with how we've been playing, you know, when we do steal a puck, we know we have a middle exit, we have a low bump, we have stuff like that. So for me, that was the best, a better change for me. It meant just a tiny bit less skating, maybe a little bit more thinking D-zone, which I like. I think he was able to get it all in. You know, we went over it in camp pretty well. I thought we played it pretty well. In the playoffs, and I'm sure, you know, after a long break, I mean, he maybe makes a tweak or not for next year, but for the most part, I think it's probably the same.
Welcome back once again, Nashville. This is The Morning Drive on 102.5 The Game. That was Nick Bonino from the Predators talking, of course, about Coach John Hines. And Joe Rexroad, when you look at coaches all across, not just the NHL, all across the realm of sports, of big-time sports, even going back, you know, as far as a high school football coach that has a lot of eyes on them. But what I don't think we do, you know, I said a moment ago, players got to play, coaches got to coach. But when it comes right down to it, if players don't play, you might be the best. You might be, you know, Vince Lombardi. You might be, you know, one of the greatest coaches, Coach Krzyzewski of all times. You still have to have the players buy into your system. And sometimes it takes time to get that done. I hope people are not judging John Hines too quickly. I think a coach needs some time to get adjusted. And when you start getting some, you know, some of the underlying statements that the players like you and you're getting along well with them, that might bode well for the future. But there's got to be a good bit of a future.
Right. Well, start with, it's not the X's and O's. It's the Jimmys and Joes. So you got to have the players
yep.
who are good enough to do the things first. And like you said, buy-in. And I think there is a lot of buy-in from the Preds. There's a lot of anger coming from the post-game comments of the players, and I certainly thought they were way too satisfied with, you know, playing well while losing to Arizona in four games. But there was, I thought, or there were some interesting thoughts within all that about John Hines that I thought you can take forward. And I think that is one thing you can apply to next year, is that it does feel like John Hines has done a good job of, one, getting to know his team, two, installing his system. Nick Bonino was probably the most, he had some of the most interesting comments yesterday in those Zoom interviews about the system, and we just heard that, you know, a little bit more zone and the D zone, stuff like that. But even, I think the teaching, I really enjoyed John at training camp, this sort of pre-playoff training camp. We got to sit in there, just first of all, for the first time watching any sort of sporting activity live was pretty amazing. But it was really instructional, too, listening to John Hines coach his team. And sometimes you think of the pros, you know, it's like, oh, they're pros. They know what's going on. They don't, you know, just go out and here's the plan, go execute it. But he was really doing a lot of teaching of the game of nuances, zone entries, and just little, you know, this, your gap's too big here, things like that. For me, I learned a ton. And I was like, it's interesting to see professionals coached that way. It felt like a lot of nitty-gritty game teaching. And I think a lot of coaches, Mike Vrabel has said this to me before, it's like, do you really think a lot of these guys are 21, 22? Yeah, they're pros, but like, you got 21-year-olds at Clemson, Alabama. How different is it? I mean, yeah, you have veterans in the NFL, and you hope they kind of help you get your message and things like that, but it's still, it's young people, and no one knows everything about the game, so teach them more about the game. And I think coaches that can pull that off can have a lot of success. So that's a long way of saying I think John Hines has been pretty impressive, with the understanding that you are judged on your results, and yes, this is an unacceptable result.
Yeah, and there always is the scoreboard that you go back to. I mean, you could be the best coach in the world. You could have the fastest skaters, the hardest hitters, but the bottom line is that wins and loss. And over time, you know, what a David Poyle of the world, what they have to go up against, and probably one of the reasons that they had to make the change when they did was – you can't fire a guy you're paying $8 million to skate, okay? You can't really work it from that side. So if there's trouble, you got to go to the coach. And it's unfair. I'm not saying it's right, but sometimes you have to go in that direction. But you would hope that there would be enough of a chance for a guy, especially a guy who's just had this little limited opportunity as Coach Hines.
Yeah, and look, the NHL fires coaches at a higher rate than NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I actually wrote about that not too long ago. It's just, I think hockey, it's like how in the playoffs sometimes you can't explain what happens. Look at what we're seeing in these bubbles already. Some pretty amazing results and upsets. And I think hockey is a hard game to get your arms around sometimes. And in all of the sports, who gets fired? It's not the player under contract. Now, in the NFL, a lot of guys get quickly, you know, cut or shipped away, things like that, more than in other leagues. But the bottom line is coaches are going to ultimately take the blame. So I think Peter Laviolette's a really good coach. He did a ton here. He has his name on the Stanley Cup. But you had to do something. You had to shake it up. And I do believe in the idea of any voice can get old at some point.
Yeah.
I think that there's some truth to that. And I would say definitely that John Hines' voice and approach are quite different.
Yeah, there's a very limited number of things, like with the dynasty. I always like to look back at the continuation and the consistency that they had in the Redskins under Joe Gibbs. He had a long term there. Some of the other coaches, to Tom Landry's, the other guys that had long tenures with NFL teams, that becomes more and more rare. But also what becomes more and more rare these days at the same time is a player playing with one franchise for the whole time. I mean, your Cal Ripkins, your George Brett's that had their entire season, I'm sorry, their entire career with one franchise. It's the same thing. They come and go. But I just think it's almost it's to a point where it just gets unfair sometimes that a coach gets so much poured on him perhaps when the players either aren't buying into his system and he's battling them. Because, you know, what do you say to a guy? A perfect example was in the Charlotte Hornets, mid-90s Charlotte Hornets. Larry Johnson got the NBA's first big, fat, guaranteed contract. Guaranteed $84 million contract at the time was absolutely unheard of. But Alan Bristow, the coach, he had no control over the team, and he had even less control over Larry Johnson because Larry Johnson ain't going anywhere. And Bristow would eventually get the brunt of it and have to leave for Paul Silas. But it was funny, Joe. We weren't supposed to be in that. They had a practice facility for the Hornets, and what you could do was kind of stupid. When you went down there, you know, they let you in for the last 10 minutes of practice, and most of the players would just walk by us anyway. They wouldn't want to talk to us anyway, especially at that point in the franchise. So I had walked in, and they had just picked up Kenny Anderson, Georgia Tech guy, Kenny Anderson, in a trade for the Hornets. So he was supposed to be a really good addition. And so we had walked in there, and they had these partitions set up. And we were a little bit early, weren't supposed to be in there yet. So we're basically standing about a foot away from Larry Johnson and Kenny Anderson, but they can't see us. And Larry Johnson is pointing at Alan Bristow and telling Kenny Anderson that, look, this blankety blank doesn't know anything about this team. This is my team, and I'm going to be calling the shots here, and that's something you got to get used to right away. And I was thinking to myself, man, first of all, it's really weird that we're hearing this. We're not supposed to hear this. And certainly can't go broadcast or anything because it's not – I guess I'm broadcasting it now.
But that's okay.
That's okay now because we're past the statute of limitations or whatever. But to see that, as I'm thinking, man, what's Bristow going to do with a guy like that? So then you got to ask again. What is the player mentality like for a coach like John Hines? If he's up against that, he's probably got no prayer. If he's not up against that, he has a chance. It's like you said, most people have said that this is a player's coach. It's a sports cliche. There's coach's coach and player's coach. But it really exists. Sometimes there's a guy. There was Ray Perkins, for example, at Alabama. You did not mess with Ray. You did not look at Ray half cross-eyed. You just simply did what Ray said during that time. That's a coach's coach. Then you get some of these coaches that bond with the players and what they really want to pour their hearts out for,
which is more prevalent. I mean, we're much moving far away, I would say, from the — you mentioned Vince Lombardi earlier, the Bob Knight. We talked about him yesterday. I mean, look, guy I covered, Tom Izzo, he's sort of an in between because he's a screamer yeller, but also, you know, you can only do that, I think, if you have good relationships. But I think we're definitely in an era of more the Brad Stevens type coach, right? Kenny Anderson, by the way, Fisk University head basketball coach Kenny Anderson.
Of
Lethal Weapon 3 at Georgia Tech, too. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, no, with John Hines, it is. Listen, the bottom line is in the professional ranks, in the college ranks, the window of time, the patience with coaches has gone way down, right? Yeah. Hey, think about Mike Krzyzewski. That does not happen
today. That just does not happen.
That does all the losing he did for years, and then they stuck with him, and it doesn't happen
Dean Smith.
Today.
Yeah, Dean Smith too. They were like hanging an effigy of Dean Smith,
right,
after the first couple of seasons, and then look what he went on to do.
Yeah, so that doesn't happen today. But in the pros, you were in a situation now where most coaches have players that coach who make more than them and are way less movable than them, so you have to navigate that.
One of the coolest guys, Joe, I ever had a chance to meet and get to know, and I was very thankful for this, was Carolina Panthers' first coach, Dom Capers. Defensive coordinator at the Steelers, got his head coaching opportunity, and this guy was just flat-out cool. He was very likable. He took the team very quickly from a terrible start, an 0-9 start, I think, 0-8, before they finally got a victory. 2 years later, he's standing in the NFC Championship game in Green Bay. So, you know, he could do it, but then the wheels fall off of the thing. Bad. The wheels fell off the Carolina Panthers bad after that year. Who was the guy that gets fired? One of the most decent dudes you'd ever hope to meet in Capers.
Hey, because that's the thing. Basically, you are beholden to what your roster looks like. Right? I mean, in pro sports, it's very hard to have these long tenures because you figure there's going to be a down dip, and who's going to lose the job?
Yep, it is not fair, but the way it is. So when we come back, we're going to switch our focus to the players and who may have to play big time for the Preds if they're going to turn this whole ship around. Stay with us, everybody. This is The Morning Drive on 102.5. And welcome back, Nashville. Once again, this is The Morning Drive on 102.5. John Roberts, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson. You know, this is that time of year when you're either moving forward or looking back. And for the Predators, they're looking back right now on a season, what may have been, what could have been. One of the things, Joe, that was very good that was the fact that Ryan Johansson stepped up the game in the playoffs. Is it fair to expect, or should we just simply expect, the same Johansson going forward no matter what the situation is, whether it's elimination or whether it's just a regular old season game?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's realistic and probably not even fair to expect that Ryan Johansson of the four games in the Edmonton bubble against Arizona is going to be Ryan Johansson for 82 games or whatever the number is of the regular season of 2021. But there's a pretty big gap between what we saw in Edmonton and what we saw for too much of last regular season. So that's where somewhere in the middle, somewhere in between there is where I think Ryan Johansson needs to live. And if he does, and also I would say if he has Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson healthy and playing like they did in the bubble with him, then I think somewhere in between gives you good results and the kind of results that you expect from an $8 million a year number one center. He was not an $8 million a year number one center in the regular season. And he, I believe, would be the first to admit that. He has been in that. And he's admitted that he had a hard time figuring out why in some cases, you know, looking at film of himself, not quite able to grasp what was missing there. But you see, when he decides to turn it on like he did up there, he can be just an overwhelming player. And we saw that in the cup run, the cup final run in 2017 before he got hurt. And it's just a matter of finding that all the time. And so we just talked about John Hines last segment. That's also a big part of his job moving forward.
So I always loved my buddy Sam Rutigliano, that was with the Browns and then went to Liberty University. One of the better press conferences ever. you may be familiar with this, but someone asked him about statistics, and Sam Rutigliano, with just this straight face at Liberty University, said, "Young man, statistics are like a bikini. They show a lot, but they cover up some very vital information." And we're all like,
"Wow,
whoa, what a start with the group here, Sam." But we appreciate it. So with that being said,
at Liberty, he
yes,
said
at
that.
Liberty for, and yeah, he took the liberty to say that at that time. So with that in mind, taking a look at the summary from 2019 to 20 for Ryan Johansson on the statistic line, which again doesn't show everything. It hides vital information, but 68 games, 14 goals, 22 assists, 36 points. Not, you know, on the surface, not too shabby.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, Ryan Johansson, no one expects Ryan Johansson to be a point-a-game player. That's not, that's not realistic. But you've got to be producing at a better clip than that. And, you know, again, the production is one thing. That's the funny thing. When you just started talking about stats there, John, I think about, man, what would like a Sam Rutigliano think about the advanced stats movement that we now have in sports?
I mean, I know you can get everything, man. You can get.
Yeah. And I know coaches now who are successful who hate that stuff. And like, I want my old stats, you know, rebounds and assists and leave me alone. You know, hockey is very much, you know, hockey analysis. And our Adam Vingan is a huge proponent of this, very much driven by advanced stats that, I'll be honest, there are times I'm looking at these graphs, I'm like, okay, someone, come on, Adam, come on, decipher this for me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's – but hockey is a game – hockey, you know, like baseball is a game in which even your traditional stats, I think, tell the story pretty well. And of course, baseball –
runs its errors.
I mean, baseball, we got wins against replacement. We've got all these things now that have been added. But baseball always was very much a statistical game. There's a stat for a lot of things you do while you're playing the game of baseball. There isn't for hockey and I think soccer. You know, both those two sports, you need what you would call advanced stats to have an idea. But if you just go with the straight-up regular stats – yeah, you know, those are still the things that you're judged on most. And Ryan Johansson, those numbers this year are not good enough. And so, you know, he's a guy who has had 30-goal seasons in Columbus. That's not that's not what he's being asked to do here. You know, he had a, well, I'm sorry, he had a 33, he had a 26 going back, playing for Torts, which, again, just the idea of Johansson and Torts together is amazing in its own. But, you know, more like, look, the last three regular seasons, 61, 54, 64, 60-point kind of player, kind of like what you expect from Matt Duchene. If you have that from your top two centers, a lot of things fall into place after that. You go from, you know, 64 in 80 games down to 36 in 68 games. That tells a story of something that's lacking.
So also to get, you know, if you look beyond the stats and maybe the convolution thereof these days, very simply put, high salary, high expectations.
Exactly. Exactly right. And so, and look, he has the expectations too. I would not put many people in the absolute category of, you know, for sure they will be here next year. Although, as John Glennon said, it's very hard to make a big move with this team. It's going to be hard. It's going to be a somewhat stunning move if any of the real core of this team gets moved out. But at the same time, I'm putting Roman Josi in that bucket. I'm putting Matt Duchene in that bucket. They just signed him a year ago. I'm pretty close with Johansson. I will say that before this postseason, John, I looked at Ryan Johansson as a possible consideration with the idea of, you know, it's going in a bad direction, things aren't working out. He's certainly an attractive player you could get a big return for, even though he has a lot on his deal too. I mean, I feel more secure that Ryan Johansson's here next fall because of how he played, but it also brings you back to, okay, can you find that more consistently? To me, those four games tell you that it's in there, you know? There's nothing like the urgency of the postseason. I mean, the regular season, especially I think in hockey and in basketball, just endless.
Yes, it drags on.
Every other night. So, I mean, you're not going to get that same thing. But, hey, there's plenty of guys in this league who produce in both the regular season and the postseason. And those are usually the guys who get paid the most.
Yeah, and it goes back to the conversation we were having before. These are the guys that John Hines has been given. Not that it's a bad thing. You know, there's certainly talent there, but there's also something to be said about when a coach takes over and he starts getting his players in, or players that he had a say in bringing into the franchise. That helps a coach out quite a bit. Not taking anything away from the pros that are already in a franchise, but, you know, when you get a guy that takes over like an NCAA basketball team or something, he has the scholarship athletes that are on that team that were recruited and handpicked by another coach. Therefore, when he starts getting the guys that he recruited and he handpicked, all of a sudden, man, the floodgates can open and you can start really going to town. So this is the group that John Hines has been given. So that's yet another challenge for the coach. And again, another reason why I just, again, preach patience. I hate to see somebody pushed out the door so quickly when they didn't have quite as much a say in who's on the ice for him.
Yeah, well, and you just brought up a reason Nick Saban realized after a few years, you know, I'm going back to college football, so I can be the GM too. And also, I can be the GM who doesn't have to comply with a draft. I can just get the best players. And that's the thing. You know, the coach in college dictates the roster. And for the most part, the coach in professional sports does not. I mean, he has input, and in some places, it's, you know, it's Belichick, but not many places. So you're also in more peril, really, as a pro coach, because You have to be in a system that is set up for parity, and then you don't get to pick.
Yep, and you got to trust your GM. Boy, you got to have a good GM that gives you those guys and works within a salary cap to do that. I always like that. I have a buddy of mine, big Alabama fan. I always like to kid him. I always say that you know, it was okay for Saban to go to the pros because he was used to coaching paid players anyway.
Nah, there
he did not
go.
Think that was funny. I don't think Marquise thinks that's funny either, but no.
Yeah, Munson. Yeah, there's no cheating in the SEC, Munson, right?
Nah, no, definitely,
none of that.
Not in the SEC. Everywhere else for sure.
Right. Yeah,
everywhere else, man. But SEC, nah, it just means more, but not more money. It just means more football.
It means.
And,
yeah,
and
exactly.
No truth to the rumor that they have to take a pay cut when they go to the NFL. No truth. Yeah,
it's just
no
about
truth.
Family atmosphere, recruiting. Yeah, it's about felt comfortable there. Yeah. And, yeah.
It's about Southern tradition of football, Joe.
That's all you need.
That's what, yeah, and, you know, more and more we're hoping that that Southern tradition of football continues, Northern, Southern, whatever it is, that we get back to that in a hurry. And of course, that is when we look, Joe, it's hard to predict, no matter what sport you're talking about right now, it's hard to predict Saturday, much less the end of the season, the midseason, you know? What's coming up this week?
Oh, it's, yeah, I mean, today – like, after the Big 12 comes out with what it said yesterday, today feels like there's a little bit of a solid, like, hey, hanging in there to play in the fall. I'm going to continue to caution people to understand that there was going to be a period of time of that being said and people waiting, and that there's still university presidents in these leagues who are still going to sit down and make a decision at some point. And it may not be the decision you like, but at least for now, there's not this immediate domino effect and the devastation of knowing that there's zero college football in 2020.
Well, the last time this happened in the NBA, it was 1956. Could the bubble burst this weekend? Well, it's going to on some teams. Stay with us, everybody. And you can also stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. Enable our Alexa skill or Google Home and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Okay, if that doesn't get you fired up on a day like that, I don't know what will, Marquise. Who gave us that little ditty?
That was Joe Rexroad.
That's my song today.
That was your song of the day.
It was, and I tell you what, I was worried for a second. I was like, oh my gosh, here comes the...
The only cuss word that he uses in that song got bleeped out by traffic.
He gets it in early. He gets it in early.
I hope they bleeped it out.
Well, it was traffic, so, you know, the only time that I love traffic is when it bleeps out words that I can't use on the radio, so shout out to that.
That bleeping sound, that was like a car, like...
Yeah, it's the music video version.
I kind of like that as a bleeping device.
So if you've seen the music video, basically LL Cool J is putting these flyers out so people can, I guess, stop using drugs, and then they kidnap Tasha. And then, you know, they drove off and kidnapped Tasha, then LL had to, like, you know, get his zip up Adidas hoodie and go to town on people. So, yeah.
Gotta love LL.
So, yeah. Gotta love LL.
Yeah. So
LL's
not,
my favorite.
Not just a song, but a story, too.
That's right.
So much music, yet so much information at the same time.
One of my favorite LL songs.
All right.
I mean, remember, you know, back in the day, the songs used to tell a story. You would watch MTV all day long, and you'd have these little mini movies, which are funny to watch now, but still.
There was a time when MTV played music videos.
That's right.
And now they just don't.
Like at all, right?
Not at
there
all.
There is this like MTV classic that does.
They do. I used to love watching the old music videos.
It's pretty awesome because it's, you know, it's mostly old stuff too. Yep. So I think that's what it's called, MTV Classic. So check that out.
Yeah. And without MTV, we would have never had Beavis and Butthead.
You are right.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're getting Beavis and Butthead back, by the way.
Two seasons on the Comedy Network.
As adults, so.
Yeah.
I'm in.
I know I don't really want to admit it in public, but I guess I am admitting it in public. I'm in.
Yeah, I'm totally,
I enjoyed the boys.
I'm proud of my love for.
I'm just curious.
I enjoyed the fellas.
I'm just curious to see them watch videos of the new songs that are out.
There will be some good stuff there.
And
yeah.
Do they age Beavis and Butthead? Do they put a little age on them?
They're supposed to be parents. Yeah.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah. Well, there's also Bill and Ted coming out as parents, right?
As parents, yeah.
Huh. So we're going back with all the, like.
Now that guy's, I'm out. I'm out on Bill and Ted.
Well, no Bill and Ted?
No Bill and Ted. I'm all in.
Well, it's also the same thing for Top Gun, isn't it, too?
Right. Yeah. Top Gun is coming back again with a Maverick Jr.
So does this mean, like is Tom Cruise an instructor at the school or something?
That's what I'm to understand.
Okay. Is Val Kilmer involved? Iceman?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know Anthony Edwards. You know the goose isn't. Anthony Edwards is not. Unless they can, like, well, I guess you can bring him back to life if you want.
If this were a soap opera, that would have just been a dream sequence.
Yeah.
So that's a big loss, the goose man.
Yeah. Anthony Edwards came to the racetrack one time, and we got to do a show with him. And I told Anthony Edwards, I said, you know, you probably can judge somebody's age when they come up to you, because right away, are you Dr. Mark Green from ER? Then you're old. No, sorry, then you're younger. Are you Goose? from Top Gun, then you're older. But if you're really old, he's Spicoli's stoner bud from Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
That's
when you're really old.
That's a great call. Now, a lot of people don't even realize that because it's a couple brief scenes for him. But, yeah, good call. And also in an underrated 80s movie called Gotcha with Linda Fiorentino.
Oh, now, that's deep, Joe. That's a good pull.
Yeah. See, Anthony Edwards.
The kind of knowledge.
Underrated.
very underrated. Super nice guy, by the way. So the final spot in the Western Conference playoffs in the NBA will come down to a weekend play-in. And it's interesting because there now, again, so many things are happening nowadays in sports that haven't happened in ages because of the situation we're in. But it's still kind of cool to bring up the history and to know for sure that something like this hadn't happened. 1956 was the last time there had to be a play-in game to determine a playoff spot. And then the Syracuse Nationals beat the New York Knicks to make it in. So this time around, it's going to be tough. There's going to be a lot on the line. But, you know, you're holding on to that lifeline if you're a Memphis Grizzly.
Well, yeah, and certainly you are aided by knowing for sure now that Giannis does not play today. So got the one-game suspension for headbutting Mo Wagner, former Michigan Wolverine Mo Wagner, who is a guy who can inspire some headbutts based on what I've seen of him. But so that means Giannis is out. So the Grizzlies, and we've talked about this week, the Grizzlies already were maybe hoping he would play half the game or not. Not much. Now he's out. So, hey, the Grizzlies win and they are in.
Yeah, they're in.
And Marquise, is it also the first time since 1956 that a player has received a one-game suspension for a headbutt? That doesn't happen very often.
I don't know. Ron Artest may have had a couple. Think Serge Ibaka had one more recently.
A little headbutting action going on.
So,
okay.
So there's been a few little headbutts every now and then. You don't get them often, but – yeah, when they happen, they happen. But I mean, only a half a game back from that eight seed, and if the Grizzlies need the eight seed because they'll have to win two games in the play-in tournament, which I think that would be difficult to beat if it's the Blazers to beat the Blazers twice in a row. So it's going to be difficult, but I think it's going to, like I said before, it's going to come down to the Blazers and Grizzlies. But
so Blazers Nets, which is on TNT, you got. You got Bucks Grizzlies at 3:00 today, so they'll know before they even watch the Blazers play. And then also alive, you still have the Spurs. You still have, I believe, the Suns are still alive. They play the Mavs. The Spurs play the Jazz. A lot of these teams are playing teams that really don't have stakes, and they all have stakes, which is interesting. But it does help the Grizzlies. You know, there's no Giannis. The problem, of course, is for this game and for any games I might play afterward is this. Without Jaren Jackson, I still don't have a ton of faith in them. But it would still be big for the franchise to be able to say you made the playoffs in John Morant's rookie year.
Yeah, and also, so Marquise, correct us if we're wrong on this. Just say this is the kind of scenarios you don't usually – this sounds a little bit more like an NFL playoff scenario. But so Memphis gets the number 8 seed with their win, but they have to depend on a Portland loss. Yes. Memphis gets the 9 seed with a win or losses by Phoenix and San Antonio. So it's kind of like the dudes, again, you don't see this often in the NBA, but all the time in the NFL, guys are sitting in the locker room saying, man, I hope that team loses because now a win gives us a chance. Pretty interesting and pretty neat scenario.
Yeah, so if you're a Grizzlies fan, pretty much you will have to tune in to TNT tonight because that game against the Mavericks and the Suns will play a big part if the Grizzlies do lose on whether or not the Grizzlies actually make the playoffs. So that Mavericks-Suns game is going to be huge, and if the Mavericks can pull it off, I don't know if Luka's going to play. I doubt it. I doubt him or Porzingis plays this game. I mean, but Tim Hardaway Jr. is balling out right now, so he's kind of a guy you'll have to be concerned about. But, I mean, look, you're going to have to watch TNT tonight if the Grizzlies lose. But I just, like, if there's no Giannis – if there's no Chris Middleton, Chris Middleton's also a big factor in whether or not the Bucks can pull away with that. I think the Grizzlies can win, but it's a matter of if Chris Middleton plays. If he plays, then it may be a game that's pretty close, but I still think the Grizzlies are a point favorite right now. So we'll see what happens, but it's going to – I love it. I love the excitement because it's four teams buying for one spot or two spots in, you know, that tournament. So it's exciting to me, but you know, the rest of the games, you know, it's not going to be very important. But also, the Jazz got something to play for, possibly. So we'll see.
You're trying to get to the five, you're saying?
Yeah, trying to get to the five. So, right. You know, it's going
to
be interesting.
No, it's great for the NBA, too.
It is.
I think it's been great, period. But I think it's obviously pretty ideal to have multiple games that matter to get in for this. And then, of course, you have the weird play-in situation. So if the Grizzlies are the eight, they have to win one game. If they're the nine, they have to win two games. And those are this weekend, because the actual playoffs start next week. So, yeah, look, I don't like their chance. Like, honestly, I mean, shoot, the Suns have won seven in a row. They have the same record as the Grizzlies, but the Grizzlies have the tiebreaker. I don't like the Grizzlies' chances against the way they're playing, against the Blazers. You know, they almost beat the Spurs with a heroic effort from Jaren Jackson. I don't love their chances to advance, even if they get there today. But again, it's still a nice achievement if they can do it.
It's going to have to be a big game from Ja Morant, at least a 20-10 game for Ja Morant, and it's going to have to be another big game for, like, Valanciunas, a guy like him, and then even Brandon Clark, who coming off the bench, he's going to have a big game as well in order for them to kind of get over that hump. And they got to hit open threes too. Like, you know, Dylan Brooks has to hit threes. You know, Milton has to hit threes as well. Like, they got to hit threes.
Dylan Brooks also has to not take all the threes.
That too. He takes a lot of threes. He takes a lot of threes for someone who doesn't make threes.
On his left foot, drifting left with two guys in his face. Like, just selection, man. A little bit better.
Now, once again, what makes this scenario pretty cool is there is that which is in our control and that which is not in our control as a sports team. That's what the Grizzlies are going to face this weekend, which, again, is pretty cool for us watching. Maybe not so cool for them if something that is out of their control is what happens. So, Joe, if you hit shift and the number 8 on your keyboard, you get something that's going to be used this year more than anything in sports. But is it right or is it wrong? We will explore when we come back. This is The Morning Drive on 102.5.